Hello and welcome to this presentation on the IBM Integration Bus Performance Testing Techniques. My name is Paul Faulkner and I work for the IIB Level 2 support team. I'm a certified IT specialist with many years' background of developing solutions for IIB. Prior to joining the Level 2 support team, I worked for many years as a solution architect in the services organization. This presentation is going to cover the techniques and tools used to performance test a variety of IIB applications. We're not going to go into depth on analyzing the results, but we're going to focus on these techniques and tools to hopefully help you avoid issues during your deployments of applications and get you up to speed quickly on some of the tools that you can use to start testing your applications. Throughout this presentation, I'm going to be using version 10 of IIB for any screenshots and commands, but where applicable, if the command is different from a prior version, I will mention that and cover the differences. So please move to slide 2. So first, let's take a look at the agenda. I've broken this presentation into 3 parts. In the first part, we're going to look at why you'd performance test, when you do performance testing, and then we're going to look at the testing strategies. Following that, in part 2, we're going to look deeper into some of the tools that you can use to enable you to performance test. And then finally, in the third part of the presentation, I'm going to use 3 use cases that's going to demonstrate some of the techniques and tools that we've discussed. Please move to slide 3. So first of all, why do you performance test? Well, the most obvious answer is that we need to test before we go to production so we can understand the characteristics of our application. We need to know what the performance benchmarks are before we go to production so we know that our application can meet the desired production load. We also want to determine whether our application has linear scalability. This means that if you increase the number of threads or instances on your application, does the scale of the CPU and the memory resources increase in a linear scale so that you can easily predict how many instances you're going to need to meet a particular load? This is not only useful to test before you go to production of your application of the actual load requirements you have at any particular time, but it also helps you predict for the future. So if you have spikes of load in production or you want to increase the constant load in production, then it can help predict how much additional resources that's going to take to configure to allow this application to meet your new needs. Performance testing also helps us identify application issues under load, such as database connection issues and memory consumption under load and bottlenecks. A lot of times when you just do regular testing without load testing, you're not going to identify issues connecting to a database if there's an issue with the connection pools, for instance. And also you may not encounter memory issues if you're just running under small loads and not under production type loads. So it's important to run a production type load test to identify these type of issues before you get to production, and then you can take countermeasures to resolve those issues. Please move to slide 4. So when do you need to performance test? Well, as I mentioned, before you go to production, ideally you want to performance test most applications, if not all, before you do that production deploy so that you know when you're in production, your application can handle the load and still use the desired amount of CPU and memory without impacting other applications on that system or not being able to meet the actual need of this application. In addition to that, though, we also recommend if you make any major changes to your application, such as introducing new nodes to the application, changing the actual design, the throughput, the pattern of the application, then you typically would want to retest the application before you deploy those changes to make sure you've not impacted the general performance of the application. In addition to when you finally deploy your application to production, we also recommend that you run benchmark testing through the design and development phase. This is going to help you determine if your actual design is going to meet the needs of what your SLAs are for production. So for instance, if you're introducing a new node for the first time, or let's say you're going to use global cache for the first time, you may want to run a benchmark test on that particular functional part of your code to determine what the impact of your design decisions are. That may lead you to a different design, or it may lead you just to the conclusion you need to have a specific amount of resources to handle or accommodate your design. Please move to slide 5. So, before we look at the tools, I want to take a look at the testing strategies that we're going to cover in this presentation. And I've listed 3 here that we're going to look at. Unit tests and prototypes. This is a strategy that allows you to test a part of your code without having to wait for the full implementation. This is where you would look at the design that you're implementing and determine if there are any parts of the code that potentially are new to you as a developer or an application team that you're not sure of the characteristics of the performance will be. So for instance, as I mentioned before, if you're using global cache for the first time, you may want to run a benchmark test on just a small part of your code or a prototype that uses global cache to see what the impact on memory or CPU would be. In the past, you may have used other methods of storing state within message broker, such as a file, MQ, or a database, and you may already have characteristics of how those solutions performed. But when you're changing that design to use something like global cache, then it's important to understand how this is going to impact the overall performance of your application in your system. So before you get too far down the design path and implementation, it's always good to run small benchmark tests on this type of application or code just to get a feel for what that performance is going to imply and see if it's acceptable for your application, for your resources, and for your overall design. Then we're going to look at isolation. When I develop a flow or application for the first time, before testing this in an environment with other applications, I prefer to test this in a standalone environment. So we're using an integration server with a dedicated integration server on an integration node. I typically like to deploy that in isolation so I can test just my application and benchmark my application with no outside contingencies. Another part of isolation is if your application is using any external resources, let's say it's using an external web service, we may want to be able to benchmark our application in isolation from that web service. So if you consider this example, if you've got a production web service that has an SLA requirement of 100 transactions per second, but in your test environment, the web service that you've been given access to can only run at 10 transactions per second, then that's a bottleneck or a limitation on your application performance testing. So that makes it difficult to drive load to actually test your application to meet its needs if it needs to consume or process more than 10 transactions a second. So in the isolation test cases, I'm going to demonstrate the use of a stub application that you can use to switch out the real web service and use the stub to help you test your application performance. So the general goal of the isolation level testing is to determine what's the best throughput your application can get without any contingencies from external services, so that you know at a minimum your application can meet its performance requirements and you're not dependent on what the restrictions are of external sources. And finally, the end-to-end testing. This is where you would test your application in a dedicated performance environment that's very similar to the production environment. So you would want a performance environment that is using the same OS levels, the same hardware, and if possible, very similar CPU and memory. If it's not possible to run on a full-scale performance environment, then you'd want a scaled-down version with scaled-down CPU and memory, but still very similar to your production characteristics. This is where you would run your final test that tests your whole application end to end, includes any external dependencies where possible, and you benchmark as though you were running production. So you would run production type messages, production type load, and ensure that you get the throughput characteristics you need while consuming the right desired amount of CPU and memory. Please move to slide 6. In the second section, we're going to look at the tools available. Now, this is not an exhaustive list of all tools out there available, of course, but I'm going to cover some of the tools that you can quickly get access to and are very simple to use to get you up and running to be able to start performance testing your applications. So first of all, you're going to need a load tool. This is a tool that allows you to load and simulate load onto your broker flows through a variety of protocols. There are many external tools on the market that we're not going to cover here, such as SOAP UI, Load UI, Load Runner, for example, that you may already have access to and may already be using. And so I would suggest you continue to use those tools. But in addition to this, and the tool we're going to talk about in this presentation, is the IBM Perform Harness. This is the tool that is used in the IBM labs to test IIB's performance, and it's freely available for download from the Developer Works. There's a link to the download along with any other support pack or any other tool I mention that IBM provided at the end of this presentation. Then, after the load tool, you need a means to monitor and analyze your data or the metrics that you collect. For this, we have the web admin, the web UI, which is the out-of-box solution for IIB version 10. It was also available in version 9. Prior to this, we had Message Broker Explorer, which was a plugin to the MQ Explorer. And this tool allows you to analyze both the resource statistics and the accounting statistics. In addition to this tool, there's a support pack IS03 that we will cover, and this is a tool similar to the web admin as far as collecting or viewing the accounting statistics data. It just gives you a slightly different perspective on the data. You're also going to need access to some operating system level tools to be able to monitor your CPU and your memory utilization. MQ tools, there is an accounting and statistics option built into MQ that you have access to. If you also install the MS0P support pack, this gives you a plugin to MQ Explorer that makes the viewing and management of this data more easily readable. Also, I'm going to mention and discuss the support pack MH04, which is a nice utility to monitor the throughput of a queue with a quick command line tool. And please move to slide 7. So next I'm going to go into a little bit more detail of the tools I've mentioned. Again, during the use case section, we'll actually see these in use. But before we get there, I just want to show you how these tools are used and some of the common features. So first, we'll take a look at the IBM Perform Harness. This tool comes, as I mentioned, you freely download it from the Developer Works. It is an unsupported tool, but it does come with full documentation. It's a Java-based tool, and you run from a command line, so there's no GUI, and it's parameter-driven. And in the blue box here, I've shown some of the common parameters that you will use. The SL is the sleep time. This allows you to provide in milliseconds the time you want to sleep between sending messages. The NT parameter is the number of worker threads. RL is the run length in seconds, so you can configure the tool to run for a certain period of time. RT is the desired rate. So this is the operations or transactions per second that you would like the tool to feed messages through. And MG is a fixed number of iterations. So as you can see from just using the combination of these few parameters, you can set this tool up to drive load, to simulate how production load would be, and you can specify it for various combinations, but quite typically what you would do is set this tool up to run at your desired throughput. So you may want to test, let's say, at 50 transactions per second. You may want to run a test for 30 minutes. You may want to have an interval between messages. And so you've got the flexibility here with this tool to create a variety of different test scenarios. What I typically do with this tool is create a script that wraps around the commands so that I can repeat a particular test scenario and just name the script with something descriptive that explains what the script is running. So maybe I've got a script that is input to Q1, run at 10 transactions per second for 30 minutes, something like that. Okay, please move to slide 8. So as I mentioned, I was going to cover the MH04 support pack. This is a category 2 support pack you can download from our site. It's a Java-based tool, runs from the command line, so again, there's no GUI, parameter-driven. And what this tool is useful for is monitoring individual queues. You can run as many of these as you want, so you can monitor several queues at the same time. And what it does is it monitors the change in any of the attributes, such as the open input count, open output count, the message NQ or DQ rates, and the current queue depth, for example. And I've highlighted just in red there on the screen some of those key metrics that I just mentioned that I use to monitor. So it's a good little tool just to monitor the throughput of a queue, so you can see the current rate of a message is being read or written to the queue. And so I use this often in conjunction in my performance testing when I want to just see, especially if there's any backlog on any queues, and see the rate of messages that are coming to the queue and being drained from. And yeah, so it's very easy little utility to use and very useful during your performance testing. Please move to slide 9. So this next 4 slides are going to cover the web UI. The web UI was introduced in version 9. And then in version 10, it exclusively replaces Message Broker Explorer for all its functionality. So for the purposes of this presentation, I'm just going to cover some of the things that we use in Web UI for regards to performance test. And I'm not going to cover every feature that the tool is used for. So this first of the 4 slides is showing you how to administrate workload management policies. So a workload management policy is used to apply different instances to a flow. So prior to version 10, we could do this in MQ Explorer live on a flow after deploying. We could change the number of instances by just going to Explorer and going to the properties of flow and changing the instances. And it would change the number of instances of the flow level on any flow that you choose to change. But since version 10, we now have to use a policy for that. So the process is still pretty simple, but in the web UI, first what you have to do is go into the workload management view. So to get there, you would go into a web UI and expand your integration node to the servers. And then within your servers, you want to go down into the within the node, this is down into the operation policy and expand the workload management folder. And there we can see in this example, I've got 4 policies that I've named 2 instances, 3 instances, etc. To create a new one, you just click on the triangle next to the workload management and you get an option to create a new policy. And from there, you can pop up the screen up here with the policy information and you can specify the policy criteria. There are a few different metrics you can put in a policy. In this case, though, we're just using the policy to drive how many instances will be used on the flow. So we're not actually changing any of the throttling or the notification properties here. And so as you can see, I've created 4 policies here, and I've just named mine so that I can easily tell what they're used for. So 2, 3, 4, 5 instances. So please move to slide 10. So the next step of applying the policies, to apply the policies to the flow, is to change the number of instances, would be, again, through the web UIs, this time to expand into the integration server, and then down through your application and expand your message flow until you see the name of your message flow deployed. And there, if you click on the message flow, you should see on the right-hand panel that you'll have a third tab appear, which will be operational policy. And when you click on that, you'll see the view that I'm showing here, which will automatically show all the policies available to your message flow. By default, there should be no policy attached, and you'll be currently running with whatever was deployed from the bar file as far as number of instances or what was pre-configured on the message flow itself. This allows you to, though, override that setting, and it's live. So once you make the change, it's going to instantly make the change at the runtime, and that policy will take effect. So if we wanted to override our number of instances to, say, run two instances, we would just simply select the two instance policy and then attach it. And once it attaches, we should then see we have two instances running. And likewise, we can come back and change this to 3, 4, and 5. So this is very useful during a performance test. So you can change during one run. So you can kick off a load test, and during that load, you can come and change the number of instances on the fly and see the impact on your system as you implement the number of instances on your flow. Please move to slide 11. Continuing on the web UI, I'm showing here how to enable the accounting statistics. Accounting statistics is configured at the application level. The flow level, sorry. And so again, you would navigate down through the tree of the execution server through to the application and to the flow that you want to gather statistics for. You can enable this on as many or as few flows as you want at the same time. And to do so, you click on the triangle next to the flow name and select statistics on. And then you can also turn it off through this method with statistics off. Please move to slide 12. And then finally, we'll look at the resource statistics. The resource statistics are captured at the execution groups or the integration server level. So this one, you would navigate down through your integration node and into the integration server, and then click on the triangle next to your integration server, and you'll get a window pop up where you can choose select. So you can choose resource statistics on to enable, and then likewise resource statistics off to disable. Please move to slide 13. So let's take a closer look at accounting and statistics. As we just saw, you can enable this through the web UI, but you can also enable it through the command line. And I've showed a sample of the command here on the screen highlighted in blue to do that, to enable it. And so why would you use accounting and statistics? Well, this can capture metrics down to the node level within the application. So you can see all the way into your flow what the performance of any node is, and this also rolls up to the flow level in the application. So you can see what the performance of the overall flow is, but also, like I say, down to the node level. And you can capture a variety of metrics, such as the elapsed time of the node, the CPU time. And we also collate the information to show what the average of those is, the maximum and also the minimum. So you've got quite a lot of information here, along with other metrics I haven't mentioned, that you can use to analyze your flow performance and determine if you need to take any action. It's good for identifying any bottlenecks in your flow, so you can see very quickly which nodes are using the most CPU, which nodes are using the most elapsed time. And so that allows you to make decisions on the performance of a particular node and make decisions on when during the design time of your flow, whether you need to address that performance or whether it's acceptable. Please move to slide 14. This next slide is showing the web UI view of the accounting statistics. And so this is assuming you've already enabled it, and then you're again using the web UI to view the results of data running through your application. It's a real-time view, but it takes a snapshot. It's pre-configured as 20-second intervals, but it's there's no historical view, so you cannot scroll back in time. You can just see the current time window that you've selected, and you can see three graphs that are configured to show the flow level details. And these graphs can be configured to choose different metrics, from the defaults by just clicking on the triangle next to each graph and choosing from the drop-down of all the available options. And then also what I've shown here superimposed in the second box at the bottom right of this page is that we see a table view of the nodes and the metrics of the nodes as the messages are flowing through. So here we can see things like the average CPU time, elapsed CPU time, min and max of all the values, etc. Please move to slide 15. In addition to using WebUI, there's also a support pack called IS03, which also allows you to look at the accounting statistics data, but it's in a slightly different format. Once you've downloaded and installed the tool, what you do is you configure the tool to monitor a particular broker by subscribing to the XML events that are emitted from the accounting and statistics. Then when you've done that, you pick the flows you want to monitor, and what it gives you is a graphical view of each node in your flow in the format of the flow. So as you can see in the top left-hand page here, this represents a flow that has a single input node which fans out then to three other paths, and each of those graphs represents a node. And although it's hard to see in the small version of this smaller window in the top left, I've showed a highlighted view on the right-hand side of what one of those nodes looks like, and it gives you the name of the node. So if you compare this to the actual message flow in the toolkit, it should closely represent what the flow design looks like, and there would be a graph for each of the nodes used in your flow. Now the nice thing about this tool is as you process message through, you can see the performance in a graphical view of any metric you choose in the graph. Here in this particular example, I've configured it just to show one line, so we've just got one blue line that's showed, but we can configure this to pick any metric of the numerous metrics we have available, and they would all be shown in the graph with a key indicating which line represents which metric. So it gives you a very powerful option of configuring the tool to see exactly what you want to see for your particular performance test. Like the WebUI, we also get a tabular view, and as you click on any of the nodes in the graphical view, it will populate the tabular view with the metrics for that particular node. So not only can you see in the graphical view how your flow is performing at the node level, you can then also see the specific numbers associated with that node below in the tabular view. Please move to slide 16. The resource stats can be used to view metrics at the execution group or the integration server level. And it's resource statistics at the OS level, so it's things like the total memory used or how many connections am I making to a database. Again, there's a number of different metrics that you can see in the resource statistics. And we saw how this could be enabled with the WebUI on one of the previous slides. But again, this can also be enabled and disabled through the command line. And I've shown an example of this here. Please move to slide 17. This slide is showing a screenshot of what the WebUI shows for resource statistics. By default, when you come into this view, you're going to see the JVM metric, and it's going to show you three graphs and then also a table below of what the JVM metrics are. But what I've done there is on the right-hand side, if I superimpose a list of all the other options you can configure this view for, one of which is the JDBC connection pools, but as you can see, there are many different metrics that you can get statistics for from this view. Please move to slide 18. Well, this brings us to the third part of the presentation, where we're going to go through three use cases that demonstrates the use of the techniques that we've talked about and all of the tools. Please move to slide 19. In this first use case, we're going to demonstrate unit testing and prototyping with regards to performance. This test case is going to show a comparison of three different transformation options within a message flow, two of which are going to use different eSQL methods, and the third one is going to use a graphical data map to show the same transformation. The results of this are all going to output the same message, so the point of this test is to show the performance impact of the coding decisions and design choices you make when developing your flows. This use case is going to show the demonstration of the performance harness to drive load, and then we're going to use accounting and statistics, and in this case I'm going to use IS03 to demonstrate reviewing the results. Please move to slide 20. So let's first take a look at the scenario. This is our message flow, and you can see it's a very simple message flow with an MQ input node which fans out to three paths. The first path goes through build output XML, which is a compute node that's going to convert our input message to an output XML format and then deliver the message to an MQQ. Second path, very similar, is going to go through another eSQL node, but it's going to use a different coding style for the transformation mechanism, and then finally deliver to an output queue. And then finally, the third path is going to use a graphical data map to do the same transformation. And again, the output in all cases is going to be identical. So no matter which option you chose, functionally, the flow will perform exactly the same, but the results, the performance of the path you choose, we're going to show would be different. Please move to slide 21. First, let's take a quick look at the data that we're going to use to process. On the left-hand side here, we've got a CSV file. This is a representation of our input message. It's a snapshot of it because the message is a little larger than this, but it shows we've got one header record, and then we've got a number of other records that contain either 10 or 8 elements. And in this case, we've got simple data that's just numeric values that represents the elements, the field data. This is going to get transformed into an XML output, which has an array of structure 10 elements, which will basically be a map of all the structure, the 10 field elements from the input CSV. And then following all this structure 10, we'll have an array of all the structure 8 elements. Please move to slide 22. So let's take a look at the code in each of these nodes. The first one is the build output XML. And this is a very standard or common way of coding and mapping from one field to another in an array. We have a while loop that loops through a reference. It checks the value with an exist to see what type of record we've got, whether it's the 10 bytes element structure or the 8. And then it simply goes through with a set statement for each individual element, moving from the input to the output, and increments the index. And then finally, we move the reference to the next sibling, and we would repeat this for every row in our input record. One thing to note here, if we're trying to see how many records or rows of data are actually executed for a particular input message, if we had an input message that had 100 rows, then each row would have to execute roughly about 11 lines of code. And in eSQL, a line of code is designated by a function that starts it and then it's terminated with a semicolon. So you can see if all of our records had 10 element structures, well, that's roughly about 14 lines of code to execute. So for 100 elements, we're executing roughly 1,400 lines of code. So obviously, this depends on the size of the array of the input message coming in to how many lines of code we have to execute to perform the full transformation. Please move to slide 23. In the second eSQL, the build output XML fast, we are using a different coding style, and here we have a single line of code. And you see that the line starts with the set statement and ends on the very bottom with the from line of code. And inside of that single line, we've got multiple select statements that allows us to select data from within our array and map to the output in an output array tree structure also. So we've got here a select statement for the array of 10 elements, structures, and then follow that with a separate select statement for all of the 8 element structures. And again, so we have a single line of code here. So the major difference is here, regardless of how many lines or rows of data in your input message, we still need to execute one statement to complete the transformation. Please move to slide 24. Finally, a quick look at the graphical data map. Very simple map. You'll see that we've got a 2 for each loops, one for each of the repeating structures. One maps to structure 10 and one maps to structure 8. Please move to slide 25. So to test this, first we have to deploy the flow, the application. And then we're going to enable accounting statistics, and you'll see here I've shown the command line option to do this. So we could do this through the command line or the web UI. And then to start a load test, we're going to use performance harness. And in this case, I'm using parameters with dash RL for run length of 300 seconds and dash RT for a throughput of 150 transactions per second. And we're sending the messages into the test perf in queue on broker 10. We're going to use IS03, or we could use the web UI to review the metrics collected for each of the nodes to analyze our results. Please move to slide 26. So here we chose to use IS03 to look at the results, and straight away we can see that we have three graphs in the middle, so one representing each of our transformation nodes, the build output XML, the build output XML fast, and the build output XML GDM. And the first thing I notice here is we've got two lines on each, and the brown line is representing the elapsed time, and the blue line represents the CPU time. Sorry, and these are both the average of each of the metrics collected. I did not show the key to this, but if you were using the tool, you would see a color-coded key that showed you what each line represented. So straight away, looking at these results, without actually trying to look at what the values of the lines are, I know the scales are the same on each of the nodes, and so I can see that my elapsed time with the brown line on the first node is roughly running around the middle of the graph, so middle of the axis, whereas on the build output XML fast, I see the brown line is relatively close to the bottom of the graph, hence taking less time. And then looking at the last one, the graphical map, I see the brown line is at the very top, so showing that that would be the worst performing one. And looking at the CPU time, again, I see the CPU on the top one, the first eSQL, is about a third, quarter of the way down. But on the second one, it's pretty much on the bottom line. It's almost as low as it could possibly get. And then on the graphical map, it's very high again. So without looking at the actual metrics and numbers, I can see straight away here, I do see a performance difference between the different coding choices. So I would want to investigate that further. And to do that, if I click on each of these nodes, I can see the tabular view and actually see the numbers and see exactly what the performance difference is. So please move to slide 27. Okay, so what I've done here is, for simplicity and ease of viewing of this, I've cut and pasted the graph, and then by the side of it, I've pasted the tabular view of the same data so that we can see on the single chart all of the information. It makes it very easy to compare. So we'll see on the fast one, and I've highlighted these in red, the average CPU time is 175 to 177, so let's say roughly 200 microseconds. So in these metrics for counting statistics are always in microseconds, so roughly 200 microseconds. But the average CPU time of the first XML, the build output XML, is about just under 4,000 microseconds, so considerably different there. And then looking at the graphical map, I can see it's even higher. It's about 11,000 microseconds. And also looking at the elapsed time, I can see the difference is considerably different for the three metrics there. So there we can see that we do have a pretty big difference in the coding choice we made, and the performance was impacted by the code choice and the node choice also. The one thing to point out here is this obviously is based on having an input message with an array, and depends on how big the array is going to drive how big the difference is. So we're not trying to emphasize here that you should choose one of these coding styles over the other all the time, or in fact that you shouldn't use a graphical map. But what we are saying is that you need to make the decision based on the requirements of your flow. If you're writing a flow that is very high performance, then you want to make the best coding decisions based on performance. The code may be less readable and manageable because it's more complex in nature, but your emphasis should always be on the performance of that flow. If, however, you're writing a flow which is a batch utility, runs once a night maybe, or very low volume through the day, then the performance of that individual nodes is not so critical. So if this particular flow only ran once a day, then saving on average, even between the graphical map and the best performing one, less than 10,000 microseconds is 0.1 seconds. So saving 1.1 CPU second once a day is really not going to make a whole lot of difference to your environment and your system overall. So again, make the right design choice and coding choice based on the requirements of your particular application. Please move to slide 28. So to summarize, what we've seen here, that style of code and choice of nodes does make a difference for the performance of your application. And this technique shows you how you can test your application or parts of your application to see what the impact is. Now here I ran this in parallel to see the impact side by side. For the most part, you're not going to see a great impact from one node to another when you do this, but this is not a style that you would test for a production environment if you were trying to test the whole application. This is just a method that I wanted to show of a single application that had three paths trying to do the same thing. So, of course, it's a very isolated unit test in this case, where I just wanted to demonstrate the performance of three coding styles. Again, the decision of which of these coding styles or nodes you choose should be made based on the performance requirements of your application and the frequency of how often the application runs, and also consider the overall resources on your machine. If you are already resource constrained because of other applications, then every application is going to impact that too, so you want to take that into consideration when you're making those choices. And then finally, we saw how to use the tools to run the load test. So we used the performance harness test to drive our load, and in this case I use IS03 to quickly analyze the results. This same method can be used to analyze a complete application. It does not need to be just for a particular unit test. You can run this same method to see what the performance of a application down to every node level, to see if there's any bottlenecks, and to also identify any potential issues in your code. Please move to slide 29. The second use case, we're going to look at linear scaling and how you test for this. As I mentioned earlier, linear scalability is important not only to help you test your application prior to going to production to ensure that you're going to meet the production level loads required, but it also helps you predict what the resources would be required should you need to handle a spike of volume or increased capacity on a regular basis. To test this, we're going to use a message broker flow that is driven by performance harness, and we're going to use MH04 support pack to monitor the MQ throughput, and then the system tools to monitor the CPU and memory utilization. Please move to slide 30. So first, let's take a look at our scenario. We've got a very simple flow. You should recognize this from the previous use case. Here we've already made a decision to use the build output XML fast in eSQL, and so our flow has been modified just to have that single path now. So our message flow takes an input CSV file and is responsible for transforming this to an XML file, which it outputs to a queue. So a very simple flow to demonstrate this scenario. Please move to slide 31. So how do we test this? First, we need to deploy our application, and we want to make sure we deploy with a single instance running for our flow. We're going to start our load, and we want to run 150 transactions per second. So we're going to set the RT parameter to 150, And in this case, we're running for a run length of 300 seconds. I'm going to capture our results and analyze them using MH04 to monitor the queue throughput. And we're also going to use the system tools to monitor CPU and memory. When we're happy we've got a good benchmark for running with one instance, then what we would do is change the number of instances of our application by applying the policy that changes the instances, again using the web UI, and then we would continue to monitor our MH04 and the CPU and memory using the system tools. We don't need to restart our load because we're going to change our number of instances live on the fly using the web UI. And again, once we're happy with it, we've got enough data for the test while it's running with two instances, we would then record this information and then increase our instances again and continue to repeat the steps until we're happy that we've run through enough instances to get enough metrics to see how our application performs. Please move to slide 32. So here we'll take a look at our results. Just in order to keep the results and see them on a single slide, I've limited my test to just running through three iterations. But it's important to note, typically you would want to run through at least a few more iterations to see how your application performs beyond just three instances. But this, of course, depends on the load requirements of your flow. What we're showing here is in the top left-hand corner, we've got the black boxes, which is our Windows command that shows the output of the MH04 tool. And there's three of those, and you'll see that I've highlighted the output input count, the message dequeue count, and the current queue depth. And to the right of that, I've taken a snapshot of the CPU, or the average CPU time, at the point in time when I was running each test for the data flow engine. Now, it's important to note I'm only running one application in my execution group on my integration server, so that I'm not impacting my test then with other existing applications already running. So looking at the results, the first set of data where the output input count is 1, we see the message dequeue count is 36, and on the far right we see the average CPU was about 9% CPU. Then when I increase the number of instances to 2, the middle set of data shows the message dequeue count has increased to 70, and our average CPU has increased to roughly 16%. And then finally, the third test shows the output instant count has increased to 3, the message dequeue count has gone to 106, and the average CPU has increased to roughly 33%. So what I'd like to do as I'm gathering this information is I chart it in a simple chart, in this case using just an Excel spreadsheet. And what I want to do here is chart the instance rate, so the number of instances of my flow, against the CPU and the memory utilization, and also the transactions per second. So here what I've done is, I didn't actually show the memory utilization here just for ease of showing this, so I don't have too much information on one page, but you would also want to get the memory and put that on the graph too. But we can see here that the CPU and the transactions per second are increasing in a pretty flat line, and we can see that they're pretty linear. So as we increase the instances, our CPU is increasing relative to the number of instances. Now what you'll find is, as you continue this test, at some point the application is going to tail off and these lines are going to start curling off and plateauing, and you're going to get no more throughput. This will happen through a few different reasons. Either you'll reach the maximum capability of your whole machine, so you're running out of memory or a CPU, or you've exceeded the limits of the execution server, or your application has reached some limits of based on the external processes it may consume. So for example, if you're consuming an external web service, you're going to be bottlenecked by the throughput capacity of that service. Or if you're consuming information from a database, you may be bottlenecked by the number of connections and the performance of that database. When you do reach that, it's important to understand why you've reached that plateau so that you can make a decision of how you want to continue scaling. If you've reached a plateau because the machine has exhausted its resources, then either you're going to have to improve the performance of your application or scale your application across multiple brokers on multiple machines or add more resources. Of course, that decision is going to be dependent completely on the reason for the plateau. So it's important to analyze your data and make a determination of why you've reached that. Of course, if you've already met your transactions per second rate that you need for production before you plateau, then it's less of a concern. But you do need to consider it in case you have spikes of volume or you do want to increase the constant volume in production at a later date. Please move to slide 33. So just to summarize what we've seen here, we've used the results to validate the performance requirements of our application. We can use this method to predict future system requirements, and we can use it to also identify bottlenecks that we may encounter for a variety of reasons while we're testing. Please move to slide 34. In this final use case, we're going to look at isolation and also take a look at how we look at the resource statistics while we're running performance tests. So in this case, we're going to use an application that consumes an XML message, then inserts data into the database using a JDBC connection, and then finally it's going to make a web service call. In this case, we want to introduce the use of a stub application so we can simulate the performance of our final web service call. Again, we mentioned reasons for this when we talked about isolation, that you may not always have control of the performance of external services when you're doing a performance test. If, for example, your web service in production has been scaled to reach 100 TPS, 100 transactions per second, and in the test environment it's only scaled to run at 10 transactions per second, then if you need to test your application to run anything beyond 10 transactions per second, you're going to be bottlenecked if you try and use the actual test web service. So one way to get around this is the use of a stub application where we can simulate the actions that the web service would make and allow us to complete our performance test without interruption from external sources. I'm going to use the performance harness again to drive our load. We can use MH04 to monitor the MQ throughput, and we can use the web UI to monitor the resource statistics. Please move to slide 19. Please move to slide 35. So, first let's take a look at the scenario. We've got a flow, a very simple flow. It's got an MQ input node that makes a call to a Java compute node, which is where we do our database insert using JDBC. That goes to a compute node, which is building a web service request. And then finally, we've got a subflow, which consumes our web service. And then out of the web service, we are writing a message out to an MQ output node. One thing to note here, we typically don't recommend having multiple compute nodes in series like this unless you really have to, because the overhead between the nodes of having to copy the tree in and out of the node is quite expensive. So where possible, you want to consolidate your compute nodes into a single node. Here I'm just demonstrating the use of both the eSQL and the Java compute node. So I wanted to put these in this design, but again, you would not try to want to do this in a flow that's going to production unless it can't be avoided. Please move to slide 36. So before we take a close look at actually running the test, I wanted to talk more about stub application and exactly what I mean by using a stub. So here we can see in the top left, there's our main flow, and it would call out to our Get Product web service. And I've created a stub application, which is shown in the box on the bottom right hand section of the page. And we're going to, instead of make the call to the real web service, we're going to change the endpoint, and we can do this in the bar file or in the code, to call our stub application. And what our stub does is it has two input nodes. It has an MQ input node, which in this case I'm using to load cache. And the cache will be loaded with a copy of all the response messages we want to simulate. So you can load as many different variations of response messages into your cache. What I typically do is load the cache and use a key from the input message that's also in the response message, and use that as a key in the cache so I can put that message into the cache and retrieve it out from the cache easily. What I also like to do is apply metadata to each response message, which has details of what the message, of how the message would perform in production, and any other characteristics that we may use during the simulation. So, for example, if we've got a web service that typically performs at 100 milliseconds response time, we can use our stub to simulate that time. But if it varies its response time based on the size of the response message it provides, we can apply metadata to each of our response messages that has a time parameters for a delay that we can simulate different time responses based on the request and the response. So once I've loaded my cache data into my local cache, and here I'm just using shared row for a local cache in my message broker flow, then I have a SOAP input node, which would be the input to my web service, and then extract the SOAP header that's what the subflow for get product details is doing. And then I go into a compute node, and the compute node is where I retrieve the response message for my particular request. So, for example, if I had data I was trying to get product information from, and the key was product ID, I may have stored product IDs 1 through 10 in my cache. When my request message comes in, I pass my input message, I find the request key, and then I look up the response message from my cache for that particular key, and I determine if there's any metadata applied to it, and then I would have code to apply those rules. So in the example I used before, if I wanted to delay the performance of this service to mimic production, I may have a sleep in my code that simply delays the code so it sleeps for 10 milliseconds or whatever setting I put in my metadata. And then you can get quite creative with other different metadata that may be applicable to your particular service. But the bottom line is here, we end up with a somewhat intelligent stub application that can simulate the performance and characteristics of a production web service that we have no control over. Please move to slide 37. So how do we test this? First, we want to deploy. In this case, I'm going to deploy with 15 instances. Then we need to start our load test. In this case, I'm running for 300 seconds with a throughput of 20. And then we would want to capture our results. So we'd use MH04 to monitor the queue throughput. And then we could use the resource statistics to monitor the JDBC pooling. Please move to slide 38. So first, let's take a look at the resource statistics. So here we're using the web admin tool, and the first thing we need to do is look at how our application is performing with regards to the JDBC pool. So I know we've got an application that inserts to a database and then makes a web service call. So we want to make sure our application is performing and has adequate number of connections available during our test. And what we can see here in the table view at the bottom, I've highlighted the most critical information, and that's that the cumulative timed out request is 11. And typically you don't want this to be anything above zero, because this shows that we had 11 requests that timed out, which would give us a fatal error in our code because it was unable to obtain a connection to the database within the period of time allocated. Next to that, to the left, we see we had 31 requests that were delayed. So not only we had 11 that were fatal, we've also got 31 more that are impacting our overall performance because they were also delayed, although they did finally get a connection. So what we take away from this is two things. One is we've got a connectivity issue to our database, which will impact our performance. So we need to make a decision here for how to fix this. There are a few options. If we believe our application is performing optimally already, then the only choices we've got is really to increase the number of connections available to the database. So we want to increase the JDBC connection pool, but you'd want to do that in conjunction with your DBA because you need to make sure that the database can handle the additional connections too. If that's not possible, then we'd probably want to look at throttling our flow because we can see that running at this rate, that we're always going to get exceptions, and so we're going to get messages that are not processed. So we probably want to look at throttling the flow so it doesn't process so many messages at this rate. But ideally, we'd want to also look at our code and see if there's a way we can improve the performance. So we'd probably, at this stage, what I would do next is I would go back and run the test and look at accounting and statistics and see where my bottleneck is. How come my connections are taking so long to be closed? Usually points to the fact that the flow is running slow and that the transactions are not committing quick enough to allow the connections to be released. And so I probably want to look at the overall performance, see where my bottleneck is. So we would probably go back, look at the accounting statistics, and that would show that we've got a web service that's running relatively slow that's impacting the connection to the database. So we could look at improving the performance of that web service or scaling that somehow. But the bottom line here is this just gives us the ability to see the data and understand what's happening in our production, or what would happen in our production environment if we were to deploy this as it is. Please move to slide 39. So in addition to looking at the JDBC resources, we can also look at the JVM, which shows the memory utilization of our integration server. And here we can see, we've got graphical view and also the tabular view, but here you can see that our integration server has been configured with a -1 value for the maximum memory, which means a default value. And the default for this version is 256 megabytes. And you can see from that 256 megabytes, we are running at roughly 100, about 100 megabytes. So we know from this that based on the duration of our test, we are far within the limit of the maximum JVM size, so we wouldn't need to make any action here to increase this. Now, of course, this implies that this is the only application to be running under this JVM or this integration server. So you'd want to take this into account as you deploy other applications, that you constantly check what the resource implications are when you do deploy additional flows to your execution group. But as of now, it looks okay. We would probably want to run this for a longer duration. We can see here that we've got a step pattern where the JVM is taking slightly more memory, and then the step down is where the Java garbage collection is running and removing or cleaning up the memory it can, and then the process repeats. As long as the where we step down is typically around the same value each time, then we're quite confident that we've not got no memory leaks within our code, and that we're not going to continually take more memory. But we would want to run this for a slightly longer period just to make sure that is the case. Please move to slide 40. So to summarize, here we showed that we've isolated our flows so that we can run a performance test without impact from external sources. In this case, we used a stub application to simulate our web service so that we were not dependent on the real web service's performance, which would have caused a bottleneck and prevented us from testing above the limit of that service. The stub also gives us the intelligence to be able to simulate the different scenarios. So not only can we run the stub to simulate what production should typically run at, We can also run what-if analysis by changing the metadata in the stub to test when the application or the web service takes longer to respond. We could also change the stub to simulate timeouts. If your production service is known for a specific number of timeouts, we could simulate the stub to do the same, and so we can see the impact of that on our application. Please move to slide 41. So to summarize, and to look at some general testing considerations with regards to performance, when you're testing, you want to allow for ramp up time before you start gathering your metrics. Throughout all of my examples here, you'll see I ran very short tests for just 300 seconds. In reality, what you would typically want to do is run a longer test where you allow a few minute ramp up, up to 5 minutes, to allow any resources to be allocated, any channels, for instance, to be started, anything that could impact the overall performance of your application, but is not typical in production environment, or is only typical during the startup of an application, but it's not the norm. And so we allow a ramp-up time before we start gathering our metrics. You want to allow adequate time to test. Again, 3 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes I was running for is not typically long enough. You want to run for at least 20 to 30 minutes after ramping up to gather your information, depending on the test. If this is just an isolated unit test, then you may get your information just a few minutes, and that's quite okay, but that's not your final performance end-to-end test. So allow adequate time to test. This will allow time to spot any memory, potential memory issues, or any other resource contention issues. And also to see if you have any potential leaks of any sort. And then finally, you want to also make sure that your results that you're testing with are valid. I've seen a few cases where we've tested and gathered all our results and documented them, only to find that the actual messages being processed were invalid and the output messages were not what I was expected. So the flow was not actually taking the path that we were expecting during the performance test. So the results were being skewed because the flows or the nodes of the flow were not all getting invoked as expected. So you always want to make sure that the test data you're using will drive the path that you really want to test in your application. Please move to slide 42. So to summarize, we've shown that use of a combination of tools and techniques to help your performance test. Again, this is not an exhaustive list of all the tools or even the techniques, but it's a starting point to get you to a place where you can easily performance test any integration bus application, regardless of the input nodes or the patterns or the design of your application. You should be able to use these techniques to be able to test your application's performance. It's important to understand your results and your requirements. Not all applications have to have high performance and are driven by the performance and so drives which nodes or which cone styles you use. If your application is running on very low volume, performance is a lot less important than if you've got an application that's running business critical data and very high volume, then performance is definitely very important, and you want to be well aware of what nodes are causing any potential bottlenecks and how your application will scale. Save your results so that if you repeat your tests, or when you repeat your tests, I should say, you can compare results so that you know if your application has improved or degraded the performance. So for instance, if you're changing your software from one release to another, we typically do improve the performance of many of the broker nodes from release to release. But the only way you'll know this with your application is if you run benchmark tests and save your results and then repeat the same tests. Let's move to slide 43. So that wraps up the presentation. This last slide shows the references to all the links I've mentioned. The last link in there also has a link to a JDBC blog that I wrote for that explains JDBC Connection Pooling. So I know I mentioned that during the presentation, but it didn't go into a lot of detail of what connection pools are. So if that's something of interest, I'd recommend that you read my blog on that. And then finally, we have links to some additional WebSphere products that may be of interest to you. And then finally, if any questions, my email address is on the first page of the slide. Feel free to contact me with any questions regarding this presentation, regarding any feedback on the presentation, or whether you would like to see any future presentations along the same topic. And thank you for listening.